Hello, this is Vice Chair Hassan. pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this meeting a remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson. Vice Chair Hassan.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Erickson is present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bowe. Representative Bowe. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Frazier.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Jordan present.
Representative Keeler.
Keeler present.
Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Scott.
Present.
Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Representative Wasliwick.
Present.
Madam Vice Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Rep. Mueller, did you have a chance to look at the minutes from February 16, 2022?
I have, Madam Chair, and I'd like to move those minutes.
All right, well, this will be a voice vote. Can I have everybody unmute themselves? All in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 All opposed? The minutes are approved. Today we have two bills, but before we hear the bills, we'll have student testimonies about bullying in our schools. We have student and community testifiers, and I request that we be gentle with the young people testifying in our bills and presenting us to our concerns. After all, the reason why we're here is to hear our constituencies and our communities across the state of Minnesota. Each testifier will have 2 minutes to speak, and the community administrator, Sydney Spurk, will message in the chat when you have 30 seconds left and when you hit the time. Please keep to the time allotted, as we have a lot of testifiers and we would like to get through all of them today. Our first testifier is Jerome Threadwell, Youth President, NAACP St. Paul. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Can you all hear me? Yes, sorry.
Yes, we can hear you. Just identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Great. Hello, my name is Jerome Treadwell. I am the executive director of Minnesota Teen Activists. We are the largest social justice organization that's student-led in the state of Minnesota. Our mission statement is simply to eradicate systemic injustice in schools. And if you don't believe that injustice in schools exists, then you should yield your seat today. But now, I'm not coming to you as your angry Black man or your desperate thug or a fantasizing high schooler, but I'm here to represent all students across Minnesota who are experiencing either discrimination, malicious behavior, bullying both in person and online because of their race, religion, sexual orientation, economic status, and disabilities. In a society where white people are perceived to have class and children are perceived to be just kids and teachers are perceived to be well-educated, you would think that marginalized students would be welcomed with the love of Minnesota Nice. But no, Black children are still invoked to hang themselves. Muslim hijabs are still being pulled off. White disabled children are still being bullied. Young women are still sexually harassed, and teachers are still saying nigger. So your system is therefore still corrupt. I literally can show you tangible photos and videos and text message screenshots and illegal non-disclosure agreements signed by minors in their principal's office in a Google survey with close to 10,000 responses from students all across the state of Minnesota sharing their experiences or experiences that they've eyewitnessed of racism in their schools. So today and forevermore, I implore you to do the right thing and don't disappoint the future children or aggravate the current climate in which our schools are so unsafe that people who are marginalized and our students whose lives matter are not mattering in your caucus. So time and time again, we've seen the race component removed from the conversation and the bills that have been proposed throughout our nation. It's time that we do something about this. We're living in the Jim Crow of the North. So just for a second, matter of fact, for the entire time that you're in office and afterwards, put yourself in those who are marginalized point of view. And if that were you, but better yet, what if it were your children? Well, today you'll have the opportunity to hear from the children that you represent. So take the cotton out of your ears and show some humanity and show some dignity for those who are speaking after me. Thank you all. And I hope you hear out all those students and have a conscious heart and a prayerful mind that you can make the better change in our system.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have Yusra Abawari, a student from St. Paul Highland Park.
Good afternoon. My name is Yusra Abawari, and I'm a senior at Highland Park Senior High School. You all don't need an introduction to Islam and the biases it faces, but we often don't hear the voices of those who have become a byproduct of those biases. I'm a first-generation Oromo American Muslim, and similar to my blackness, I wear my religion. In the third grade, my hijab was ripped off from my head from a fellow peer, and that was the first time I was ever called a terrorist. There was no punishment for that student. During my freshman year, one of the coaches on my badminton team forced me and a few of my other teammates who wore hijab to apologize for an incident we had no part in. Even after telling him we had nothing to do with it, he said, and I quote, "The person involved was wearing a hijab and you're wearing one, so you'll apologize anyway." Although he's no longer working at the school, he left without punishment. From a young age, I understood that my humanity was reduced to the perception of my religion. And in middle school, they were the good Muslim kids and the bad ones. You were categorized and the staff made sure you knew who you were. And although I was categorized as, quote, one of the good ones, there were very few good ones. And it caused a divide within the Muslim community at my school. And I was isolated. And the few times that I acted out of line, I was reminded, you're not like the others. This isn't like you. Why are you acting like them? And because of this system, I was distanced from my community and fed perception against my own. And this system has forced me and my fellow Muslims to prove our humanity over and over again as if we were the ones acting inhumane. Our schools have become just another place for our youth to face discrimination as if we haven't already faced enough. These experiences stem just from one aspect of my identity. We need to start holding our staff and students alike accountable, and I think this bill is just the start of this happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Yusra. Up next, we have CJ.
Hi, my name is CJ. I'm a senior at Richfield High School, and in my district, I've had to deal with a lot of racism and a lot of tyrannical administrators. It started when my chemistry teacher called me and others alike thugs for going to a walkout and saying George Floyd's life didn't matter. Following that event, my administrators, they didn't do anything. They said that it was nothing they could do. It took me going to a school board meeting and shutting it down and forcing them to hold him accountable for them to put him on paid leave for the rest of the year. After he got put on paid leave, they felt that they did their job. And that's the problem with our school system, with the discipline system. They give us the bare minimum and expect us to accept it. So our superintendent put out an email saying that everything that happened wasn't true, basically denying it, covering it up. Another trend in the educational system in this state. After he put out the email, he decided to put me on lockdown. I couldn't move around the school without an administrator, a principal or assistant principal escorting me around. I was treated like a prisoner inside of school. And that's all I have to say right now.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have Maya Calvert, a student from Prior Lake High School.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Hello, my name is Maya Calvert, and I'm a junior at Prior Lake High School. Attending the Prior Lake School District has severely affected my mental and physical health. I was bullied for the shape of my body, as most of the girls had a common look of being very skinny. This caused me to stop consuming as much food and soon have an eating disorder. I've had pencils and water bottles thrown at me. I've been racially slurred online and in person. And a boy once spit on me and called me the N-word right after. And when I was in middle school, there was a Confederate flag at a house right by my school for everyone to see. I no longer felt safe at school as I was being bullied and harassed for my skin color, my body, and my hair texture. I now have pretty intense anxiety, and sometimes I feel waves of panic in public as I feel unsafe out of nowhere. It makes easy everyday tasks hard for me to do at times. I'm a full-time online PSEL student, which means I'm doing full-time college as I'm still in high school. And my motivation for school has changed as I still have fears of not being safe if I choose to attend in person. I have a little sister and she goes to Twin Oaks Middle School in Prior Lake, and she is experiencing the same issues that I did. I just want this ongoing cycle to end because these experiences will stick with you forever. Thank you.
Thank you, Maya, for your testimony. Up next, we have Joeria Jama, a student from Spring Lake Park High School.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Joeria Jama, and I'm a senior at Spring Lake Park High School. As a Black Muslim student, my friends and I have experienced unfair and racist treatment from our peers around us. From being questioned about leaving class to go to pray, or our clothes and our hijab being ridiculed, navigating our school system as Black Muslim students has been difficult. Islamophobia and racism run deep within our systems. And within the past year, we have witnessed countless of students being called out for participating in these discriminatory actions. As a senior, this increase in incidents scares me. My younger siblings, cousins, and friends shouldn't have to fear going to school and being bullied by other students or school administration. Our schools need to be safe spaces for students to learn and feel empowered. When we complain about being ignored, laughed at, or ridiculed, the adults around us must hold those people accountable. I believe that this bill is a step in the right direction and will ensure that students can feel safe and protected no matter who they are. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have Peyton Adam.
My name is Peyton. I graduated from Prior Lake High School, spring 2020. I didn't really prepare anything because trying to remember everything I've gone through, and I just didn't know what would be important. And I know what I've experienced is not nearly what my peers experienced being fully Black. I am a white passing woman, but I also have autism. So going to Prior Lake was very toxic. Freshman year, I remember the day after Trump was elected, some upperclassmen were walking around with a cutout of Trump and a boombox playing God Bless America, and nobody did anything about it. My English teacher would also say the N-word when reading literature. We told the staff, and they said they'd get back to us. She no longer teaches only because she was retired, and she said this was an issue in every year. The next year, they presented a packet to present these kids with the history of the N-word. It was a two-page packet with a little poem and the significance of it. They asked us to do Socratic seminars and basically put us in a situation where we were bound to argue and have people attack us for our beliefs. Because when you're in the minority of an opinion in a majority place that is right-sided, they would say, oh, you're too sensitive, and they would use slurs and call us libtards or whatever. And teachers would hear it, and this would go on during our seminars. It didn't feel safe to be there. And to think that after I've graduated, 2 years later, this happens again and again, and the principal has promised he'd fix it and he hasn't, I have no hope left besides this bill today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have Aliyah Murray, a member from Minnesota Teen Activists.
Hi, my name's Aliyah Murray. I go to Philly Senior High and I'm 16 years old. Since I founded Minnesota Teen Activists back in May of 2020, I've seen stories from all over Minnesota, to Columbia Heights, to Prior Lake, to Maple Grove, to Fridley. Minnesota Teen Activists was founded to eradicate systematic injustices within schools in Minnesota. Back in August of 2020, Minnesota Teen Activists conducted a survey that I've seen from many schools in Minnesota.
We can hear you, Aliyah.
Students responded to the survey. 42.4% of students felt as they experienced discrimination in their schools. 85.2% of students felt as they witnessed discrimination in their schools. 71.1% of students said that they aren't aware of resources they could reach out to if they're a victim of discrimination. And lastly, 74.4% of students felt as their school district does not do a good job at handling discrimination regarding discrimination. So what I'm seeing here is that the majority of youth is facing some form of bullying, harassment, and discrimination. That is not only affecting our mentality, it's affecting our test scores and our relationship with our families and peers. It's affecting our future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have, I am going to butcher this name, the last name is Hartman, certified consent culture educator.
That's me. It's Bergen.
Bergen, okay.
Yeah, no
problem.
Please
introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Bergen Hartman. I am an advocate for Aaron's Law, which passed in Minnesota in 2019. And the purpose for Aaron's Law is for schools to teach lessons of consent and personal body safety at age-appropriate levels from pre-K through 12th grade, and for it to be repeated each year. A year ago, I began reaching out to local schools asking how they've implemented Aaron's Law, and to date, I have yet to find a single school in Minnesota that has implemented it, nor one teacher or administrator that I've spoken to that had ever even heard of it. With 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 5 boys experiencing sexual violence before the age of 18 in this country, simply signing these laws with no measures to enforce them is not enough with the epidemic of sexual abuse. What piqued my interest in this matter was hearing about the gross negligence by administrators in the Edina school system in mishandling a massive sexual abuse scandal in which a male student created a child porn trafficking website called Edina Cum Whores, where he shared the private photos, names, and contact information of dozens of underage female victims from the Edina High School and their middle schools. After this abuse scandal, no special resources were offered to victims, no letters home to parents notifying them that their children may have been victims of trafficked child pornography, no school assembly, no public acknowledgement of an investigation, no media, nothing. It was silence. And we all know that conflict avoided is conflict multiplied. Every time we ignore this, it happens again. So we need to ensure that there are protocols in place for how schools handle sexual abuse, bullying, harassment, as well as how to prevent it. These kids are taking to social media and they're begging for help, confessing to enduring such trauma in their young lives that they are cutting their skin, abusing drugs and alcohol, they're suicidal, their grades are suffering, they're becoming violent. And I'm here today to ask you to please direct existing funds from the state's budget surplus to support the creation of child advocacy programs or task forces to enforce Aaron's Law in our school, as well as enforcing this bill today, supporting preventative measures and proactive care for victims of harassment, bullying, and assault. I think that Minnesota has an opportunity to follow the lead of other states that have seen tremendous success in effectively implementing Aaron's Law, as well as other anti-bullying laws, and I believe that we can make a tangible difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have Aliyah, a student from Lakeville North High School.
Hi, my name is Aliyah DeGroot. I attend Lakeville North. I am a junior. Growing up in a majority white school and town has been extremely difficult for me and other students of color. While we learned about bullying and different types of bullying, we didn't learn about racism, homophobia, Islamophobia, or any other types of bigotry. And because of this, our experiences were ignored and looked over. And we've had other students of color, and I've had to listen to so many heartbreaking stories of students being called slurs and experiencing extreme forms of harassment. And I have been called, growing up, I've been called monkey, slave, and cotton picker, and even the N-word. and nothing has been done about it, even when it's been reported. Students do not feel safe inside of these schools because nothing's being done about their safety. Their safety is not viewed as important. And in order to make your students feel safe, this bill is a start to how we can make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have Ayane Charso, student from Highland Park Senior High School.
Hi, I'm Ayane, a junior at Highland Park Senior High School. Thank you for having me here to speak on the experiences of racism that I've had to endure in a school environment. I have faced racism, colorism, and Islamophobia in and out of schools, and I need to say that it always hurts more when it happens at school. We're told as students that we're in a safe environment with adults that we can confide in and trust, but that's not the case. I've seen experiences that minority groups face in schools, and they are often painted as harmless jokes or downplayed as someone just making fun of another student. Our authority leaders in schools never seem to want to call it like it is, which is racism, homophobia, sexism, whatever it is. I have felt insulted every single time when someone has tried to belittle my feelings and experiences with racism at school. School environments are supposed to be a safe place for everyone. When students ridicule their peers, they should be held accountable. When there is an accountability, no one addresses their ignorance that's actively hurting minorities. People's ignorance is harmful, and the sooner we can address it and act on it, the sooner we can build a safe environment for all students that are continuously being hurt by schools' disregard for their student body's feelings. And that is why I fully support this bill. It's the first step that we should take to build a safe environment, a safe school environment. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And we, up next, we have Rikita Francis. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Rikita Francis. I am a 8-year resident of Prior Lake. And I just want to read a few incidents that my daughter has encountered in the Prior Lake School District. Starting in second grade, we've been here for 8 years. She's been targeted by teachers and high schoolers, with many people witnessing it, being called Aunt Jemima by adults in the before and after school programs, while them firing the para that actually was trying to defend my daughter and keeping the staff member and supposedly putting her in a diversity training that I never again heard about. Through third grade, same kind of a thing, just being bullied by girls and boys. And this is where the physical bullying started. When a couple of kids started to push my daughter down, she pushed back in the school system, tried to, again, suspend my daughter. Thankfully, a parent came forward that was a parent at that moment and defended her, and so they couldn't. This happened all through elementary school. She's right now in seventh grade in the middle school at Hidden Oaks Middle School. In seventh grade, walking in the door, she still hears racial slurs, from the N-word to "are you black or white today," because she's biracial, from KKK and Proud Boy slurs thrown at her. Not only is this coming from her students or peers, but teachers as well. Teachers do nothing when they hear these things in the hallways. I have to give my daughter permission to walk out of class every single day, and I'm contacted 2 or 3 times a week to go to somebody that she trusts. This has caused very bad mental and health issues for my daughter, resulting in her trying to take her own life. And this was before Naya. So I really appreciated Naya's family coming out. Also have caught my daughter trying to sneak alcohol to numb the pain from school. All of the unjust ways creating a very, very toxic school environment. School district leaders do nothing. All they do is cover this up, even if you make the complaints. Just this last week, a boy body shaming my daughter, teachers trying to give her, the only black kid in class, 2-minute time limits to go to the bathroom. All along this same week, a boy telling my daughter that he wanted to rape her. The schools do nothing. Lots of manipulation and a lot of unlawful tactics on kids to cover themselves and not the kids every day. Kids are attempting to take their lives due to bullying and racism and discrimination. My question to you all are, what side of history do you want to be on to help the kids not have to walk in a hateful world in and out of school? I have a 3-year-old that has to come up in this. So I'm very, very, very on the side of this bill. And I urge you all to please consider passing laws to help bring our school halls back to walkable and the lives of many children back to livable. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I want to thank everyone who testified today for taking time out of your really busy schedules to come and share your stories with us. Up next, we have House File 3260. Is Rep. Hansen in the call with us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am here.
All right, fantastic. Welcome to the committee. I move that House File 3260 be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. Rep. Hansen, please explain your bill to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I appreciate you taking the time to hear the stories of the students and parents who spoke before me. This is a sombering bill, and I think we can all agree that kids deserve to be safe at school. Something, regardless of what letters behind our name or how we vote, that we can agree on more often than not. Unfortunately, thousands of kids have come forward telling adults that this has not been their experience. There's a reason we are often referred to here in Minnesota as the Jim Crow of the North. And the stories we've heard so far today and will continue to hear today will only continue to amplify this dark truth. We passed anti-bullying laws in this state in 2014. These laws are designed to address what I would call traditional bullying on one side of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, we have very clear laws that talk about addressing civil rights violations, human rights violations that go through the judicial process. Unfortunately, neither of these processes adequately address the terrible actions and experiences that we've heard here today and that I've heard over the last few months doing this work. The judicial process cannot be the only pathway to resolution. It's inaccessible to too many, and it's too slow for the kids who are spending their youth experiencing this trauma. Late last year, a child in my district was verbally attacked and told to kill herself because she's Black. She's okay, she's still with her family, and she's recovering from this experience. But the trauma of what she experienced is not only her story. I've heard this on repeat since getting into this work, and no child should have to live through these things. Since engaging with the youth and the adults in my community, our coalition has received over 10,000 stories in just a few short months of the violent, ugly, and malicious discrimination that they have faced in schools. There are few to no legislators in this body who can say that they have not heard of an experience that one of their constituents' children have had. This is a pervasive issue. This bill seeks to begin to address the root cause of the trauma that's happening in all of our districts. Racism and discrimination are malicious and sadistic actions. And dehumanization in any form is wrong. It's time that we grow and adapt our policies to address these unacceptable behaviors and to make sure that we're doing our part to keep all kids safe at school. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to my testifiers to tell us more about why we need malicious and sadistic policies to be developed in schools across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Hansen. We have testifiers. I wanna just remind everyone to limit their testimony to 2 minutes. We have a lot of testifiers to go through and another bell to hear. The first person is Summerfields. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Summerfield, and last year I was a seventh grader at Century Middle School in Lakeville, Minnesota. I was 12 years old when I was sexually assaulted by my STEM teacher. He was a first year teacher, so he just got to the school district last year from coming from other schools. He was fired from his past 3 jobs, and I don't know why, but it's just strange to me.
You're muted, Summer. Sorry, you're muted.
Sorry about that. Hello. My name is Summer Field, and I was a seventh grader at Century Middle School in Lakeville, Minnesota. I was a 12-year-old when this happened to me. Last year in 2020, I went to school with a hybrid schedule due to COVID. I had in the first quarter a first-year STEM teacher new to our district. In November, right before we left for full distance learning due to COVID, we were to finish our wood shelves as much as possible. I waited and I watched for all my friends to go first, and then I started working on my part of the shelf, which was sanding. Unexpectedly, my STEM teacher came up behind me, grabbed my hands with both of his hands, and were holding onto the wooden board, so I couldn't move. I was trapped between him and a running sand. I was traumatized. I'm sorry. Then he pressed his hard hands against my back, and I was trapped there for about a minute.
I'm sorry. This is your mother, and I just want to make sure that everybody heard you say that. This teacher pressed his hard penis up against my 12-year-old's back as he trapped her between a sander.
I was 12-year-old when he sexually assaulted me, and he never said a word to me while he did that to me. As a teacher, the person who controls my grade. Finally, I was able to get free from him. I grabbed my books and I ran out of the room. I'm changed forever from a STEM teacher who the school district decided to hire for me to learn. I told my parents September 1st, and they immediately called the school district. Other students had had experiences with this teacher, and they did nothing about it. So I had a victim statement on September 3rd, 2021, with the principal and a female dean. We were denied the request for a female member from the school board, and we were denied her. There's been no safety plan for me to this day for me to this day. No one has ever talked to me about it. The school district did not have a mental health professional reach out to me, and no one's ever informed me about anything to this day. I'm in eighth grade now, and I do not take STEM, but this teacher would keep coming to my class. He would walk around my other classrooms while I was trying to work and learn. I would have to go under his arms just to get into my classrooms this year, as he blocked the doorway with his body. The school put this teacher as a substitute in my classroom this year. I had a severe panic attack, and I went to the nurse 77 days after the initial report of sexual assault. The school nurse did her job as a mandatory reporter. For 77 days, no one did anything. No one mandatory reported. That day, my family decided we needed to get a harassment restraining order. After the HRO was granted, the school still did nothing to give me a safety plan. It got so unsafe at school that my sister and I had to leave our middle school. We left all our friends, we left our singing group, we left our school play. We left all the teachers who we loved. My sister and I are not a part of our neighborhood school. So being after home being last year due to COVID, our school district kept the teacher at our school and not us students. The STEM teacher is not reliable at his last three schools. Why isn't he reliable at these last three schools? Because the school did nothing to keep me safe and give me a learning environment free of harassment. Leaving to go to another school is something I never should have had to do to keep myself safe and had to learn without fear. I am a victim and I am hurt. I'm a child trying to figure out my education for my future. My life has changed. My mental health has changed. I don't trust adults anymore to help me. I'm having panic attacks at my new school. I hope you adults will help me and all the other kids like me. Our future depends on it. I am at Kenwood Middle School now, and I was sexually assaulted at Century Middle School.
Thank you so much, Summer, for sharing your story, and I'm really, really sorry about what happened to you. Up next, we have our next testifier is Anna. I don't want to butcher your. Oh, sorry, Rep. Edelson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Representative Hassan. I just wanted to find out what school this was. And Summer Field, I'm wondering if I could follow up with you offline after this committee. I'm going to put my email in the chat.
Okay. Thank you, Rep. Edelson. Up next, we have Anna, and I'm going to...
Negretti is my last name.
Negretti. Okay, apparent. Go ahead. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Anna Negretti, and I'm the parent of River White, who's sitting here with me today. River attends McGuire Middle School in Lakeville. Over the course of River's education, she's experienced increasing and blatant racism, primarily at the hands of adults, including a recent incident where her tutor, a paraprofessional, referred to Native Americans as savages. The tutor told my 12-year-old, quote, "The savages killed my people too." When my daughter redirected her, the para excused her language, indicating it that it couldn't be offensive as it is the name of a local city here in Minnesota. In that same conversation back in January, she questioned my daughter's political affiliation, her sexual orientation, her religious affiliation, and rounded out her ignorant statements with a life lesson that if River did not learn to make eye contact and follow directions when spoken to, that bad things could happen to her, like the accident we now know to be the murder of Dante Wright. While the school responded by terminating her from the after-school program, she continues to be employed within the district in the media center where River no longer has access to. Adults within her district have said to peers, if she didn't want to attend tutoring, why didn't she just leave? Why did she have to ruin a teacher's life? As if River was the wrongdoer for speaking up in the way a strong Indigenous Black Mexican-American young lady has been raised to do. What is clear is that the policies in place do not cover the behavior across settings when a teacher, para, coach, tutor's behavior is deemed unacceptable in one area. How can they continue to be employed in alternate roles where the unacceptable behavior can continue? Please help protect our children. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you, Vice Chair Hassan, for holding the virtual gavel for me. Up next, we have Aaron Leary-Biorge. I'm probably mispronouncing your name, so if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Aaron Bjorg. I live in Prior Lake, and I have 8 children. The story I'm sharing today is about my 2 youngest daughters, Maggie and Josie. This past May, they tried out for the middle school dance line. When the list came out, I was surprised to see that they had not made the team. All 6 of my older children played sports throughout their years at Prior Lake High School, and 4 went on to play college ball. I'm familiar with the athletic program in our town, and I know that there are no cuts made to middle school sports. Maggie and Josie have also danced competitively at a high level for 8 years. I called the acting athletic director at the high school. She's familiar with my children and could not explain what had happened. Then I called the principal at the middle school who I have worked with previously. He could not explain either and sent me to the high school principal. He had no answers for me and sent me to the brand new athletic director and the new director of equity. My meeting with them was in August of last year. They did not understand either, but were determined to make things right. About a week later, I received an email from the AD asking me to communicate with the coach directly as she was an LLC and he had no jurisdiction over her program or her decisions. When she was finished giving me her background, her experience, and how well the program was doing under her watch, she started telling me what she looks for at tryouts. She said she looks for dancers who are exactly alike, that when they enter the competition, the judges see that they are exactly alike. And when they line up to perform, they are exactly alike. After the 4th exactly alike, I said, you are using some words that are raising red flags for me because my daughters are exactly alike, except for their skin color. Maggie and Josie were adopted from Ethiopia when they were babies. That's when she lost her composure and got intensely defensive. I ended the conversation with a thank you for your time and sent an email to the AD and the director of equity to let them know what had happened. It was very clear to me that my girls were cut because of their skin color. The AD asked me to meet with him and offered me an apology. He said that since the season had already begun, there was nothing he could do but that the program would look very different next year. The schools need to have clear, specific guidelines on how to hire and train employees and immediate consequences for not following those guidelines. It is my hope that this committee will make these changes necessary so our children can be protected from this behavior. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for sharing your story as well. Up next, we have Tamara Grady, the school board director with Osseo Area Schools. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Tamara Grady. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I am a proud parent of children who are transgender, non-binary, and a part of the LGBTQ community. And I am also an Osseo school board director. When my children came out as LGBTQ, my husband and I celebrated their self-awareness and continued to give them our unconditional love. But I worried about the impact of homophobia and transphobia at school. Over 85% of LGBTQ students have been bullied in school because of their actual or perceived LGBTQ identity. Bullying is compounded for students who also face racism. While advocating for my children, I met many other parents that were facing the same barriers of systemic change. I heard deeply disturbing stories of harassment that many of our students face in the hallways and classrooms. As a school board member, I continue to worry about the impact of hostile school climates on our diverse scholars. I worry about our students' mental health because the burden of social rejection and harassment. Because navigating adolescent identity is difficult enough without the additional burden of living in a world where you're constantly reminded that you're different and you don't belong. The truth is that we all have a moral responsibility to protect all vulnerable children, because each and every student deserves a safe and welcoming learning environment, because no vulnerable child should be denied their human rights, because we are the adults who need to stop hostile, malicious, and sadistic behavior and hold people accountable for actions that harm others. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We will open it up to member questions. I'm not currently seeing any hands raised, but I will pause for a moment to see. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for those testifying today. And I just want people on this call to know that in 2014, when the anti-bullying, safe and supportive schools bill was passed, it wasn't without controversy. And one of the controversies was that the law did not apply to teachers. Although there was language in the bill that said when there's an imbalance of power, we had an amendment on the floor, the Republican side of the aisle did, that said this should apply to teachers and school personnel. And that was voted down. So many of these cases that I had just heard about could have been avoided had that amendment gone on. So I think that the bill here, I think it's important to add teachers to the existing law. I do have trouble with the language of sadistic and the other word. I'm drawing a blank on it right now, but I do have a problem with that because I think the current law would handle every single one of these cases that has been talked about and given testimony to today. Because the current law, I've got it right here, the language says, defines bullying as intimidating, threatening, abusive, or harmful conduct that is objectively offensive. So I think every single one of those examples that were given today in testimony would apply under current law. And to this young lady named Summer, what happened to her was criminal. That was criminal. And it should have been taken up in the court of law. And I know she got, an order for protection, but that teacher should have been you know, and I don't know all the circumstances, but to me, file a lawsuit against him, bring charges against him. My heart goes out to her and any child put in that situation. And we also need to do something to make sure that when one teacher leaves a school district for what a reason like this, that they can't just move on to the next school district. There has to be a way of sharing the information when these teachers have sexually assaulted a child like they did here, so that they don't go on to do it again. Those are my only comments, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Hansen, any comment?
I appreciate the comments, and I agree that there are definitely places where we need to keep, you know, enforcing our existing law. But if existing law was working, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. And I think that's an important piece, is that the existing statutes and laws, we can't only funnel people through the judicial system because it is inaccessible to so many people. Clearly, there's some of the stories we've heard today that are clearly criminal. And yet, you know, we have heard plenty of others that did not meet that level. So that would be my comment.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And I will just note, members, that we will be wrapping up about 2:05 so that we can get to House File 3378. Up next, I see Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are for the author of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hansen, I'm disappointed that you didn't explain the provisions within this proposal, because I don't think the public, if they're listening or watching, are aware of some of the parts of this bill. So I hope that you'll backtrack at some point and explain not only to all of us, although I've read the bill and studied it, as I think my team has, but the public needs to know what malicious and sadistic conduct is needed for, et cetera. But my first question to you is then, has the bullying statute as well as the human rights statutes failed in our state?
Representative Hansen.
Representative Erickson, I appreciate the question. I would wholeheartedly say yes. Our systems have failed our children.
You're on mute.
We have our systems have failed our children immensely. In just the last few months that I've been working on this, as we've mentioned, over 10,000 stories of children experiencing this have come forward, all of which I interact with, we encourage to submit reports to the Department of Human Rights and the Department of Education. And I am in constant communication with them as of recently to continue to close the gaps on this. So like I said in my opening comments, this is the beginning of a solution. It is not the end all be all solution. And I am looking forward to the continued efforts to work with local governments, MSBA, and many more to keep moving this forward. Because as much as we can say the law says that these things should not be happening and that this is what our law is intending to do, it's not efficient and it is not working. And I don't know about you, but I know you are great in the education space. You have led on this for many years. And I know that you probably hear these stories too. And so at this point, I find that this is a time and a place where we need to step up and do more. I can also connect you with folks who have submitted these complaints and what their experiences have been going through the existing processes as they stand today.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. There has to be a point, though, at which the law has failed. And is it, you know, even understood? And there are obligations by school boards, by MSBA, MSDA, MREA, all of the groups that, you know, need to make sure that districts understand what the law is. But we pass laws every day during session, and I find that they're not followed. So, you know, we have to depend on the agencies to be the advocates for these. And I'm just really disappointed that MDE has not stepped up the plate. We passed Aaron's Law years ago, and yet I listened to a testifier. I watched the video last night who said that, In her survey, districts don't even know about Aaron's Law. So we have a greater issue than I think the one that's being presented here today, because there has to be knowledge of what the law says and then implementation and follow through. So there are people to pay the price, needless to say, for what has happened to these precious children of ours. I mean, this is just not acceptable. The teacher code of ethics, by the way, states very specifically that you can't violate the code of ethics in your teaching profession without having some kind of reprimand. And I had a bill that I introduced last year, and I hope I'll submit another hearing request, but that prohibits sexual contact between a teacher and a student and make it part of the teacher code of ethics, because we can't have that going on in a profession that is taking care of our children day after day. But I wanted to call your attention, since I'm talking about teachers and the code of ethics and the fact that PELSBY, the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board, does have a disciplinary committee. And I served on that when it was the former Board of Teaching. I served on the disciplinary committee, in fact. But I have some examples here of what happens when teachers, and by the way, parents, you can file complaints against teachers and submit it to PELSBY. You don't have to go directly to your school district. You can do that outright, and parents and students, you need to know that. But, you know, here's the situation. A teacher grabbed a student's arm, made a racially insensitive comment, and withheld food from the student. Another teacher used a racial slur with a student during an altercation. Another teacher made a student uncomfortable through inappropriate touching and possibly reduced the student's grade for not being more receptive. Now, these are cases that have come before PELSBY. A teacher made inappropriate comments to a student, including reference to a sexual act. Another teacher engaged in inappropriate contact and pursuit of a personal relationship with a student. We've heard about this before. And my last example is a teacher exchanged online sexual messages with a self-identified 16-year-old. So my question, Representative Hansen, is does this fall under your definition of malicious and sadistic conduct?
Representative Erickson, I'm just going to pause for a moment because there was a comment about MDE, and I want to give Mr. Adosh Uni an opportunity to respond to that, and then we'll go to Representative Hansen for your question, and then I also would just like to note that there are multiple other hands up as well, so we're going to have to move quickly here. Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. Just to kind of repeat the reference, I think there was a comment about from Representative Erickson about the department and promoting or raising awareness around existing laws. Obviously, we're talking within the space of the anti-bullying law or the Safe and Supportive Schools law, as well as Aaron's Law. We had a hearing several weeks ago on Aaron's Law. The department in that space has made resources available for districts. We appreciate the comment from Representative Erickson. There's always space for improvement. And for also, I just want to make sure I don't miss that. Really appreciate the braveness of all the testifiers that came forward today, the children and the parents, and hearing their tough stories. That's very important for people to hear, and that's extremely brave of you all, and it's important for the department to take that back. The department hosts resources for Aaron's Law. We are also under the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. We have a school climate center that for a period of time had funding where we were able to provide resources for parents and students to come to us for a call line for concerns if districts were not following their Safe and Supportive Schools plan that they had to have in place, as well as ongoing training opportunities, professional development opportunities for districts to implement their laws. We're always happy to hear comments about where we can improve and more resources that we can provide for districts and raise awareness around duties under the current law.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you again, Representative Erickson. I just shot you an email with my cell phone number. Like I said, I know you've been in this space and are committed to making sure kids are safe at school. And so I invite you to partner and fill me in on all of your expertise and continue to address that. The other piece I wanted to address for the public, as you asked, was to define what malicious and sadistic conduct says in my bill. For the purposes of this section, malicious and sadistic conduct means creating a hostile learning environment by acting with the intent to cause harm, by intentionally injuring another without just cause or reason, or engaging in extreme or excessive cruelty or delighting in cruelty. And I think that we can agree dehumanization in all forms, it's cruel and unusual, and that we are all committed, MDE, MSBA, and a number of different organizations, to doing what's right and doing the best thing for our kids, because that's what they deserve.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And members, I will just remind you that we'll be holding this bill over for possible inclusion. So it will not be the last opportunity to talk about this bill. Very briefly, Representative Erickson.
Yes, well, the point that I wanted to make is when the discipline was given by Pelsby, that in each one of these cases that I cited, there was a slap on the wrist because the suspension was stayed, which means the teacher could be back in the classroom. The teacher didn't have any visible punishment. But I have one more question for Mr. Ooney, and he doesn't have to answer it right now, but he does need to email our committee. You know, who is funding the School Climate Center presently, because it sunsetted after 5 years? It expired, and so I'm wondering how it's being funded, because it's not been funded, and specifically what has been done to help districts improve their school climate. Because when I look at the report card, the only thing that is asked about school climate to students is whether or not their teachers care about them. And I find that percentage to be very high, in contradiction to what I've heard today and saw on the video last night. So, you know, I'm very confused and frustrated that we're in this dilemma, and I have to point to the department in many instances, because I'm just not sure that they're fulfilling what's in the law and what their obligation is. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Mr. Ooney, briefly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, again. Adosh Ooney, Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. There are a range of supports that we are using for the department through our operating funds, as well as through federal funds, whether it be through a range of grants that we have to support staff at the Climate Center. In terms of what we're engaged in right now around improving School Climate Center, we've got our resources and professional development we're providing under the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. We have a School Climate Transformation Act, or a grant from the U.S. Department of Education, that's allowing us to provide multi-tiered behavioral framework professional development for districts. We have two or three rounds of Project Aware grants where we're working with specific districts. And through all of these opportunities, we're learning and increasing our capacity to be able to provide support for districts. But as I mentioned before, there is always space to improve and to increase our capacity to help districts and students and families.
Thank you, Mr. Ooney. Representative Wasilick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to really thank all of the testifiers, students, families, folks who testified today. I know it's really can be really difficult to share these really personal stories. So I just want to lift up the testifiers, make sure they know that we heard them, we understand, and we want to help, and that we're here to help with that. One thing I did want to point out, I think, in this conversation is, how many administrators and other folks in leadership roles that students and parents talked about as not being responsive to their concerns. I think certainly conversations about what schools actually know about the law is important, but I also think that there are lots of organizations that lobby at the Capitol for school districts that know this is the law, and they communicate that as well as MDE does. They communicate that to school districts. There's not really a reason why school districts wouldn't know that we have the Safe and Supportive Schools Act in law. Why they wouldn't know what the law is and what it requires. And I think it's really important that we point that out, and that we put some accountability on the school districts to fix this problem and to address these issues that we're hearing. It's
clearly a large concern that we're hearing from a lot of students. And I think I'm glad to see Representative Hansen and later on Representative Berg bringing some legislation up so we can continue this conversation and make an impact here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz. Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I first want to thank the students, the parents, the community members, the advocates who came and shared their stories. I just want to say, I hear you and I see you. I'm really sorry this has happened to any of you guys. And I'm sorry this is happening in our schools. I don't think it's a surprise to any of us. I think we've been hearing this consistently from different groups of students, from from social media, that there is issues in our schools and that our students are not safe. I just want to apologize to every student in this call and every student that will watch this. I want to say, I'm sorry we failed you. We, as this system, failed you. And I'm really sorry that we failed you. This young people should not have to, go through traumatic events every day. Because it is traumatic what's happening to these young people. A 12-year-old should not have to worry about, walking around in the hallways of schools and feeling unsafe and not knowing what's going to happen to her. Our kids, the only thing that our kids should worry about is which exam that they need to study for and which exam they can excel and what to wear for prom and who they're going to date. Those are the things that our students need to worry about. They do not need to worry about racism, sexism, Islamophobia, transphobia, homophobia, any form of hate. And I am really sorry that this is where we're at today. But I promise you that I work on this with Rep. Hansen, and I thank Rep. Hansen and Rep. Berg for working on this and for going out of your way to arrange this wonderful hearing today and to uplift student voices. But students, you're not alone. Many of us are your allies, and we want to help and we want to support you through this process. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Representative Erdahl, I see that you have your hand raised. And just as a reminder, we are going to have to move on here shortly, and I want to ensure that we give the author the last word. So hopefully you can be brief, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, and I will be very brief. Just a quick reference to Aaron's Law, but apparently is not being followed in the way it was intended. I think part of that is because when it was passed, it was no money, no mandates, and so it's not taken seriously. It's estimated that $560 million a year is the cost to the state of Minnesota because we do not adequately prevent sexual abuse of children. I think we need to pay close attention to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Hansen, last word.
Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Madam Chair and Madam Vice Chair and everybody who's taken time to comment on this important issue. I stand available and ready to work alongside you to find the solutions that our kids deserve and need. And like I mentioned originally, I don't care what letter is behind our names or which way we vote, because this is the right thing to do. And we do have what it takes. We do have the skills, the knowledge, and the experience among us when we come together to create the change that we want to see in the world while still living in the world as it is. So thank you again, everybody. I appreciate your time and the committee's generosity. And thank you again to MDE for being here to answer questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. House File 3260 is laid over for possible inclusion in the committee omnibus bill. Next up on the agenda, we have House File 3378. Representative Berg, would you like to move House File 3378 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do move House File 3378.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Members, we will have a time certain vote on this bill today. At 2:26 p.m., Representative Berg, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I hope every single one of us on this call today has a pit in our stomach right at this moment. I hope what you have heard has moved you in your humanity. I hope each one of us carries this pit in our stomach throughout the day, because it's the same pit that our students as young as 7, 8 years old carry to school every day. It's the same pit in their stomach that parents have when they send their children to school every day. So no, when we passed Safe and Supported Minnesota Schools Act in 2014, it didn't work. And I don't think that we would have had 10,000 stories submitted in the last 3 months in my district, in Rep. Hansen's district, in every single one of our districts, if it had worked. And that's why we've come here to House File 3378 today. To briefly explain the bill, it has three components that are important. One of the most important ones is a mechanism through which the school districts need to report to the Commissioner of Education that they have talked about their anti-bullying policy with their students, their staff, anyone that works at the school. They have to report the progress to the commissioner. The second part of it is that they have to follow a 3-year training cycle so that every adult in the school, that is the janitors, the adults that serve lunch, the paraprofessionals, the librarians, not just the teachers, but every adult in that school must go through a 3-year training cycle of anti-bullying measures. And to put teeth into it, the teeth that was lacked in the 2014 bill, we can withhold funding from the school district if they fall short on these requirements. We need to make sure that there is an anti-retaliation piece so that our teachers, our staff members, any adult in the school, including parents that come in and talk to the administration about what is happening to their children, cannot be retaliated against for bringing to light what is happening to our children, the stories we've heard today. And finally, there is a civil penalty if any of this is failed to come to fruition. That's the enforcement we're missing. That's the teeth we're missing. That's why the stories you've heard today are recurring and pervasive. And Madam Chair, I'd like to call upon my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Berg. First up, we have Manny Says. Please unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Manny Sayeth. I am speaking on behalf of my 8-year-old son who attends Cherry View Elementary in Lakeville. Excuse me. Please pay attention to the fact that the Jim Crow of the North comment has come up on multiple occasions. To put into context, I hail from the state of Virginia, the former capital of the Confederacy, yet I have found Minnesota to be far more racist. In Lakeville, my child is unable to access an equitable education and does not feel safe at school. He has been assaulted and called racial names at school by his bully on numerous occasions. For a year and a half, I've been fighting to be addressed, the student held accountable, and face consequences. It's been a year and a half of going up against a steel wall of silence, lack of accountability, and lies. We've been met with retaliation for simply demanding the school do the right thing. Just 2 weeks ago, I had to demand that the vice principal refrain from exhibiting malicious behavior towards my son and myself. My son has missed 10 days of school this year alone due to mental health and physical stress related to bullying, intimidation, harassment, and gaslighting by peers and staff. Mental health matters. No child should have to feel scared and physically vomiting at the thought of attending school. Also, to be told by an adult that he did not belong and needs to find another school. Simply because a day prior, I called her out for falsely writing my child up for things he did not do. According to the principal and the district, she lacks the training to know that her comment was wrong. I call BS. As a result of the school's inaction, the physical assaults did not stop until I filed a police report with Lakeville Police. But still, the bully has not been punished. In fact, my son has had an adult following him since November, and makes him feel like a criminal. The leaders, please hear the impassioned pleas of these students and us parents. We need you to step in, as we can only go so far without your help. We ask that these unfortunate and horrific examples of injustice in our school and communities, that they are enough to drive accountability and warrant changes. Schools should not no longer be able to hide between a field.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Appreciate you coming and sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Up next, we have Marcy Katzenberg. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we are able to hear you. Please proceed.
Okay, my name is Marcy Katzenberger. I am a sophomore and I do online school now. I have been bullied since the first grade, and in third grade it started to get physical. I was shoved into lockers, and I was slapped on the head a couple times. I've been spit at also. On the bus rides home, every time I went home, it would be rocks being thrown at my head, people would spit on me, and people would constantly be shouting like rude names at me. In middle school, it got even worse. The friends that I thought were my friends had left me and started rumors about me, so now I was all alone. I didn't have anybody to protect me. I didn't have anybody to say anything against them. Everybody just went at me. I had found out my sexual orientation, being bi, and that made people go crazy because I had told somebody who I thought I could trust, and they ended up telling everybody. I actually had a girl who said that she liked me, and I had really liked her, and she did that to bully me, actually. She got at me while I thought we were a good couple. She had told everybody that I was a lesbian and that I was a faggot, and everybody just hated me for it. Seventh grade homecoming game, I was jumped by a group of people. They had shoved me down, and they started like saying awful things to me. They were kicking me, they were slapping me, they were punching me. They were just awful, and no teachers, there was several teachers there, had done anything about it. They basically just ignored the entire thing and just went on with their day. I actually had to go home and cry, and that was actually the night that I had attempted because of how awful I felt and how awful people would treat me. Thank you.
Marcy, thank you so much for coming to the committee today and sharing your story with us. Kathy Katzenberg, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Kathy Katzenberg, and I will tell you that no matter how many times we tried to address the situation, and I started an anti-bullying group, and we went to the TV interviews and newspaper interviews. Anytime that I tried to make some type of change in our town, it would be undermined by teachers who would go on social media platforms and say, there's a couple of things that are a problem in this town, but don't worry, guys, we are still amazing. And it was almost like they were trying to tell us that this was such a small situation that it didn't matter. And the more that I tried to push into having something done about it, the more I would get pushed back from the community, trying to make sure that they were not seen as a bullying society. I had full-on adults bullying me on a regular basis, trying to make me shut up. Watching my daughter, who originally had the most beautiful personality, most beautiful and incredible outlook on life, and she had a light in her eyes, and she was giggly and funny. As time goes on with each year, watching that light fade. Sorry. Watching that light fade. Sorry.
It's okay. Take a deep breath.
And seeing her in so much pain every single day and just asking me why, what did I do wrong? Why doesn't anybody like me? It's hard after all these years to still try to be excited for her future.
because all she can see is how much people hate her right now. And no one is doing anything to help us. No one, it's just gotten worse. She can't even go to a regular school. She was completely denied any semblance of a regular childhood. She was segregated from the other students so that she wouldn't have to be facing them every single day. They would make her walk down the hall with a pass after everybody else had gotten to class first so that she didn't have to face it. She's the one that's being punished. These kids are being punished, not the ones that are causing the problems. And I was told that each school is allowed to make their own decisions on how to handle bullying, that the law was really open to interpretation. And each school in my district has a different view of it. And it shouldn't be okay.
And Ms. Katzenberg, I'm sorry to have to cut you off there, but thank you and Marcy for coming and sharing what is clearly a very painful story. And I'm sorry that this happened to you and your family.
Thank you.
Up next, we have Chris Commers. Please unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Thanks to the committee for your time and consideration this afternoon. My name is Chris Commers. I'm a recently retired teacher from Eastern Carver County Schools, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to support House File 3378 this afternoon. It's never been more difficult to provide students with the physical and psychological safety they need to learn effectively. The impacts of the pandemic and social unrest over the past 2 years have changed students, educators, and the learning environments they inhabit every school day. Not to mention the broader society, the context that all of our school districts deal with at the local level. From urban, suburban, and small town school districts across the state, we're enduring and attempting to cope with unhealthy behaviors reflecting our current times. Despite the efforts of highly qualified and skilled district leaders, my former employer, Eastern Carver County Schools, has struggled at the classroom and building level with initial responses to student behaviors reflecting racial intolerance directed at students of color. We owe our educators support and direction as they navigate devastating and tragic situations while navigating a pandemic and the social upheaval we're living through, and preparing students for their future. House File 3378 would provide a clear process, allowing educators to focus on the prohibited conduct in a timely, reflective, and appropriate. Ours wasn't the first district to experience these challenges, and we're frequently hearing of other incidents we have this afternoon in other districts throughout the state. We owe our students, their families, and the educators who serve them better responses and support in responding to behaviors we're seeing in our schools. House File 3378 is a practical, pragmatic response to managing the behaviors our educators face today. This bill provides a process that can be used tomorrow to support educators.
Mr. Commerce, I'm sorry you are at time, but thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Meg Luger-Nicolai. If you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Meg Luger, and I'm an attorney with Education Minnesota, a union of more than 80,000 educators working to strengthen all elements of the school experience. And I'm grateful for the strength that some of our testifiers have shown today and appreciate the opportunity to bear witness. Education Minnesota supports this bill, which is narrow in scope but addresses a critical aspect of the conversation today. There are some concerns about the frequency and fidelity with which there is specific training on school anti-bullying policies, which schools are required to have and for which MBE has created supportive materials, as Mr. Uni testified earlier. This bill is intended to put in place an incentive to ensure that this training is not an afterthought. It requires that districts have specific conversations with staff, students, and volunteers about the implementation of the anti-bullying anti-bullying policy, which means a reporting process and an investigative process. And as someone said earlier, sometimes laws are not followed, and thus the district may certify or must certify that this training takes place to the Department of Ed, and a failure to implement it in light of how important the knowledge and implementation of this policy is can subject districts to penalties. In addition, we also hear stories of individuals among our ranks, educators who are afraid, especially in the early parts of their career, to rock the boat and to make complaints when they perceive that those reports might not be welcome. Even one instance of this would be harmful to students, so the bill makes clear that such reports will be protected by Minnesota's Whistleblower Act. And so we hope that other members of the committee will support this bill as well. I think it's a small but critical piece of ensuring that we continue to deliver on the promise of the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We will start with member questions. There are a number of hands up, and just as a reminder, we've got a time of 2:26 to take the roll on this bill. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair. My question is for the bill author. Representative Berg, can you expand a little bit on the civil penalty piece here? Is that penalty go to the school? Does it go to the school district? Does it go to the school board? How does this work?
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Poston. I'm going to go ahead and pass that to Meg, who helped craft the language.
Ms. Lugar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The civil penalty is per violation. It would go to the district. Does that answer your question, Representative Poston?
Yes, thank you very much. And thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poston. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I couldn't get unmuted in time. So I have a lot of questions, and I'll only ask one of them, but I feel like I do not have a good handle on all the intricacies of this bill to be able to really vote on it. One of my questions is, this bill doesn't really specify how much state aid could be withheld from school districts for compliance failure. So maybe if the bill author could expand on that a little bit, and then I'll let other colleagues ask more questions, but I feel like I have not a good handle on this bill at all.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm gonna again pass it to Meg for the specifics on this. I believe there's a certain amount of aid that's allotted each student. And I think that's the amount that is intended, but I'll let Meg answer the specific question.
Ms. Lugar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The language refers to existing state law that permits the withholding of funds in the instance that there is a deviation from state law or rules passed pursuant to the authority of the department. And this incorporates that by reference. Representative Bennett, we did have an earlier conversation with the Department of Ed about this. I do believe that the language may shift a bit in transit as this bill may move on. But ultimately, this is like any provision of law for which the department is empowered to withhold funds. This is for violations of a law that's important and to protect students.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just would have to say again, I wish we had more time to discuss this bill. We've had a lot of testimony, but not a lot on the details to allow us to really make a good vote. So would ask for more time next time for conversation on this. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. And I will remind members that there's the fiscal implications for this will be discussed within the Education Finance Committee as we're focused on the policy provisions here. Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, I'll defer to our committee's lead for her questions.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think we have to think about the lack of accountability. Certification is not accountability. And I'm very disappointed that the authors of this bill are Education Minnesota, because teachers are not included in this accountability. Well, this lack of accountability, I should say, because certification is not accountability.
So, you know, I can't support this bill until I see there are really teeth in it, because you can discuss all you want, but you have to ensure that the policy is understood, that it's implemented, that it's followed through. That's going to take a great deal of diligence on the part of every player, student, staff, teacher, administrator, whomever, parents included. And, you know, this bill's not ready for prime time, and I hope that if it proceeds, that we'll look at those measures, because everybody has to be included in the certification. And, you know, the penalty, I know you've said school districts, but, you know, this would go to judiciary, and I think there'd be a robust discussion about for whom the penalty, who's liable for the penalty would really be, because it wouldn't necessarily be a district or a school. It could be a staff member. So with that said, I'll be voting no on this bill, and hope that if we're going to make some changes to the Safe and Supportive Schools Act, that we do it so that it has teeth behind it that are under the realm of accountability, not just certification. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Losowick, very briefly.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just missed Ms. Luger's answer to the civil liabilities. My Zoom blipped right when she said the answer, so if she could just repeat that for me. Thank you.
Ms. Luger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The answer is that the civil penalty would be levied against the school district who's responsible for implementing the Safe and Supportive Schools Act, and particularly the policy and training upon it.
Thank you, Representative Wasilowick. Representative Berg, last words on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say I have really enjoyed the discussion that's come out of this. It's always great to have your ideas and your language and your bill challenged a little bit. It's especially important when we're talking about something like bullying, because it is imperative that we get this right. I am happy to work with Representative Erickson or Scott Bennett to make this what our children needed to be. In closing, I just want to thank the testifiers that are here today. We saw children brave enough to come and tell their story in a room full of adults that they don't know, be it Zoom or not. That is incredibly courageous. I hope that we as legislators display that same courage when we vote today. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Berg renews the motion to refer House File 3378 to the Committee on Education and Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Vice Chair Hassan, aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett?
Bennett votes no.
Representative Berg?
Berg, aye.
Representative Bow?
I abstain.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilowick?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes, 7 nays, and 1 abstain.
Thank you, Isabel. With a vote of 11 ayes, 7 nays, and 1 abstention, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Just a reminder, our next meeting is on Wednesday, February the 23rd. There being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.